fool. That will take decades.
How much damage will the Dread Gods cause without the monarchs around to contain them?
Subject One gave a cruel smile.
Try to defeat the beasts first, then. That was what the last generation attempted. It was the most awake I've felt in however long. They crushed the beast of Earth, and then they discovered what we did. When one of the beasts dies, the others inherit its power until it is reborn. They become smarter, stronger, and the hunger takes hold. The beasts devoured the rest of the monarchs, and for a while I could live through their eyes.
He stared off into the distance, reminiscing, but only for a moment. Then he returned to reality.
But that energy didn't last. As a generation of monarchs passed, hunger weakened. The great beasts had to sleep more often and never fully awakened. I lost myself to the long dream until more monarchs were raised up and failed to leave.
Not only was Lyndon having trouble reconciling this new knowledge with what he knew of the monarchs, he was becoming restless. Subject One paced around his throne, looking down at his own body. But Lyndon felt a foreign will pressing against the authority of the labyrinth. Apologies, but how does this help me defeat Rhaegon Shen?
He seeks to replace me.
The echo touched his chest, where the hole was in the enshrined body.
To devour the devourer.
Lyndon looked to his heart again. He took your core binding.
It will be his path to great power,
Subject One said, and each word dripped with mockery.
Such power.
Lyndon looked to the throne, where Subject One had been imprisoned for an uncounted number of years. His spiritual perception moved throughout the endless room, and he recognized that this was the perfect state of the Dread Beasts. Physical and spiritual had been fused seamlessly, so that it reminded him of the Herald's body. Subject One suddenly shot forward, his teeth bared.
You stop him by ridding the world of monarchs. Kill them, banish them, convince them, it matters not. Make them leave. If Rhaegon Shen becomes me, then he will fade into mortality with no monarchs to sustain him. If he does not,
his grimace turned into a horrific corpse smile,
then the beasts will feed one last time.
I will do all I can to stop him, Lyndon promised, and that commitment settled on him. Rather than a promise between him and the Echo, it felt like a promise between him and the labyrinth. But I need a way out.
As the first child of hunger, I give you my blessing.
The authority of the labyrinth softened, easier for Lyndon to mold. Now he could feel the script chains controlling the mundane functions of each room. He suspected that if Subject One were still alive, his blessing would have been more effective, but anything would help. Lyndon focused his will, and the walls blurred. Another exit appeared. Now, for the first time, Lyndon felt the ancient authority that bound Subject One here. It was a suction even stronger than the hunger aura, a hole that Lyndon could sense through the void icon. No matter how much power the slumbering wraith consumed, it only weighed him down. Lyndon saw the longing and the transparent black and white eyes of the Echo. Even with the keys to his prison, he had been unable to escape. He had been trapped here, half awake, controlled by hunger, and feeding on those who entered the labyrinth. Intelligent he may be, a prisoner of a tragic story, but Subject One was still a Dread God. The doorway out was open and waiting, and Lyndon made a note of its position. He bowed his head. Gratitude. May I know your name, so that it can be remembered. For the first time, Subject One looked troubled.
I don't remember.
I will tell your story nonetheless, Lyndon said. Then he thought, and I'll take your arm. Once he banished the echo, he would have the greatest upgrade for his arm. Just before he did, though, he plunged his authority back into the labyrinth. My apologies, but my friend was fighting your projection of Osmanthus. Is he still?
All such projections would be cut off when I died.
Relieved, Lyndon saluted the dread god and bowed. My gratitude, then. He let the echo fade. Then the burning cloak sprang up around him. He reached for one of the dead dread god's arms.
His information will support a divine purpose, Dross said. Mine.
The script lights overhead flickered, and the hunger aura howled. Even the wind drifted past Lyndon, being drawn behind him as though by a huge, indrawn breath. Without Lyndon's approval, the wall blurred. Two possibilities, Lyndon said aloud. Either there's no power going into the control script, so the entire mechanism is resetting, or the monarch found his way back. Dross appeared just to sneer at him.
Which do you think it is?
Lyndon pulled the spear Midnight from the haphazard harness he'd made on his back. It was awkward to use one-handed, but the aura was still too thin here, and he had no more suitable weapon. We're fighting to run away, Lyndon sent to Dross. If you can borrow my authority for the control script, then let us out.
If you were stronger, I wouldn't have to do such menial labor.
Lyndon didn't argue. He was focused on the approaching presence and wondering how long it would take him to burn through the wall and get away. Then a new figure appeared at the doorway, striding into the room.
Have a seat, Wei Shi Lyndon Aurelius, Regan Shen called. Let's talk.
Chapter 22. The light in Subject One's chamber was thin and gray, and the golden chair that Regan Shen pulled out of thin air gleamed more brightly than anything else. The monarch found a mound of flesh that rose higher than anywhere else and perched his chair atop it so no one was seated above him.
Apologies for disturbing you, Lyndon said as soon as he entered the room. I was only on the way out.
Regan Shen sat down and raised a crystal goblet, studying Lyndon over the rim. The lion's eyes were sharp, and the light inside them resonated well with this room. He was a predator of endless hunger, and he ruled over this ancient and ruined kingdom. His clothes were still worn and stained from months of travel, and Lyndon noticed that many of the cases, capsules, and devices strapped to him were now missing or empty. He didn't carry the orange sword or the thin one anymore, but rather had an axe of weathered stone leaning up against the side of his seat. And he still didn't give off the spiritual pressure of a healthy monarch. By what Lyndon could read of his power, he reminded Lyndon more of Yeren, a herald but spiritually weaker. That lifted Lyndon's spirits, as there might be a way out of this. Then again, he remembered the endless weapons Regan Shen had summoned, and the skill with which he'd fought so many opponents at once. A skilled wielder could more than compensate for a weak weapon, and Regan Shen still had Tiberian Aurelius's remnant, the most powerful weapon of them all. Lyndon had strained the connection to that space past breaking, and it was possible that Regan Shen hadn't repaired that connection yet. At least, Lyndon hoped so. If he could summon a monarch's remnant, then Lyndon was a step away from death. After examining Lyndon head to toe, Shen gestured with his goblet to the corpse on the throne.
I see you met the old man. What did you think of his echo?
I had great sympathy for him. He was trapped here for so long.
Yes, yes, but otherwise, I presume you understand the origin of the Dread Gods better now, unless Aethon already found a way to tell you.
So Aethon had known. He had mentioned being restricted by oath, and it made sense that a monarch might have forced him to swear to keep their secrets.
I believe I do have a better understanding of the situation, yes, Lyndon said cautiously.
The monarch leaned back in the chair.
Well then, I won't take the long way around. Swear not to spread awareness or to tell anyone about me, and I'll let you go.
There was quiet as he sipped from his goblet. Lyndon feigned delight.
Of course, I'll swear as you wish.
Dross could tell everyone, and even if he couldn't, there were surely other ways of releasing the information. But that was assuming the promise would bind Rhaegon Shen. But twice now, Lyndon had seen evidence that he could slip the bonds of soul oaths. He was only playing along. Certainly the monarch factions already know, though.
Everyone knows who matters. If you're a monarch, it's impossible for you not to understand the situation, and for everyone who we think might ascend to monarch. He shrugged. Either they swear, or they don't make it. You would have to swear this oath eventually, to Malice, if not to me.
Who is he afraid I'll tell? Lyndon wondered. If the monarchs knew, as did anyone who might advance to monarch, then he couldn't tell anyone who could do anything about it.
Dross scoffed. If the rumors spread, the monarchs would have to kill those who heard it. Surely that would be a pain, like sweeping up fleas.
I swear not to discuss the relationship between the monarchs and the dread gods with anyone who does not already know, nor to reveal details about Rhaegon Shen's actions in the labyrinth, in exchange for my safety and freedom.
The oath settled lightly around Lyndon, waiting for Rhaegon Shen to answer. The monarch studied him again, then drained his goblet. With a faintly regretful sigh, he placed the goblet on the arm of his chair and casually reached for the stone axe. His spirit flared, and the axe shone as he slashed the weapon through the air toward Lyndon. Lines of bladed light flew at Lyndon in a net, a complex striker technique of Sword Madra, all coming from an Archlord weapon. Lyndon poured soulfire into the hollow domain. If he hadn't been expecting this, he would have been too slow. The Madra crashed into his domain from 16 different angles, and weren't fully wiped away, but were weakened enough for Lyndon to strike them all down with his hand. Rhaegon Shen stood lazily from his chair.
I knew fools never made it to Sage, but I had hoped. You are young.
If you weren't willing to let me go, why make me swear at all?
Oaths tend to bind remnants.
Lyndon felt a powerful will surround him, and the air began to stretch and warp.
I suppose I won't be able to keep yours.
Lyndon reached into space.
Hold!
He commanded. His working went along with the world, which naturally resisted intrusion, so he remained in place. But it still strained him. No one who made it to Monarch had weak willpower. Dross snapped a warning as Lyndon's attention faded from the working, and the world slowed slightly as Rhaegon Shen dashed in, stone axe pulled back for a strike. Lyndon lifted Midnight and used the soul cloak. All the strength he could muster went into the weapon, and he didn't strike for the axe. He plunged it toward the monarch's chest. Monarchs were incredibly durable, but this was still Death Madra. Lyndon was willing to bet his blow would be the deadlier. Rhaegon Shen clearly agreed, because he redirected his weapon, striking the spectral green spear aside, which was when having only one functional arm ruined Lyndon. He could have put twice as much power into the spear, or he could have used Dragon's Breath with the other hand. But with a dead arm, he was vulnerable as Rhaegon Shen released the axe with one hand and jabbed at Lyndon's ribs. Lyndon threw himself backwards, but even glancing force from someone with an ascended body slammed into him and drove all the breath from his lungs. He was hurled back, and while in midair, he begged Dross for help.
What would you have me do? Dross demanded. I told you I don't remember him.
I'll take any help I can get.
Dross hissed. Fine, but don't blame me if I become useless to you.
His attention vanished from Lyndon's mind. Dross's body, the ball of Dream Madra at the base of Lyndon's skull, began to spin. The spirit was searching his own memories, but he managed to lend some support at the same time. The entire world seemed to sharpen and slow slightly, as though Lyndon had finally learned how to use his senses. He twisted to land with his feet against the wall instead of slamming into it with his back, swinging Midnight in front of him. He triggered the striker binding, and a dense river of Death Madra slashed across the room. Its passage traced a blackened line across the pale flesh that covered the chamber's floor. Rhaegon Shen used the broad head of his axe to deflect, not even slowing. He used no enforcer technique to close the gap, but his body was that of a herald. He arrived before Lyndon landed on the floor, swinging up with his axe as he released his own striker technique again. 16 blades flew out of the axe head and struck at different angles while Shen swung up from the ground. Lyndon used the hollow domain once more and met the axe with Midnight, but the striker technique struck him all over the body. Weakened by the domain, they didn't shred him to pieces, but they stabbed into him, leaving him bleeding. Midnight clashed against the axe, but Lyndon's strength wasn't enough. His weapon was knocked wide. Lyndon tried his best to defend himself and the following exchanges, but even as Dross's ability to read Regan Shen's patterns improved, Lyndon couldn't keep up. His own physical strength was beyond anything a sage should have, and Regan Shen had his body eroded by months of the suppression field and exposure to hunger aura. But he was originally a lion. His strength was fundamentally different. He was stronger, faster, and he had more fighting experience than Lyndon and every one of his ancestors put together. By furious, desperate use of the soul cloak and Dross's silent support, Lyndon managed to keep the axe from cleaving him in two, but he was still backed against the wall. He finally deflected one blow and hurled himself away, dragging the hollow domain with him as he fled into the open center of the room. He was out of breath and spending pure Madra like a waterfall spent water, but he was still alive. Lyndon turned to face the attack he knew was coming, but Regan Shen didn't bother. He waved a hand and a gold portal the size of his head tore open. A red lion erupted from the portal, a spirit forged of blood Madra launched from some kind of weapon. Lyndon kept the hollow domain up as the technique plunged into it, and Lyndon put all his power into a soulfire-infused empty palm. A huge palm imprint smashed into the lion, which dissolved, but not before it landed a slash on Lyndon's chest. Three claw marks tore across Lyndon's ribs, and he choked back the burning pain as the forger technique dissipated. Regan Shen stood against the wall with folded arms. Two more portals had appeared in the air around him. Lyndon dropped the hollow domain to sweep Black Dragon's breath at the monarch, but a silver shield materialized in front of him. He didn't even look.
"Dross, what can you tell me?"
Lyndon shouted in his mind.
"Dross, reporting for duty."
Without manifesting in reality, Dross still popped up in Lyndon's vision. He was plumper, somehow cheerier and brighter, with a larger eye and an innocent smile that reminded Lyndon of Mercy.
"Whatever I can do for you, Lyndon."
"Can you give me a combat report on Regan Shen?"
"Not quite, but I can give you my best guess."
"Then keep trying."
But I became the helpful version of me."
Dross sounded hurt.
"What else could I try?"
"How about the deadly version?"
Lyndon suggested, but he couldn't spare Dross any more attention. From another portal came a series of spheres the size of a human head, each shining a different color and radiating aura. They were natural treasures, sealed in globes, and they flew to scatter all over the room. Regan Shen was preparing for a ruler technique, but Lyndon couldn't deal with that yet, because another bloodline had leaped out of the original portal. Lyndon drove Black Dragon's breath at it, but the technique was at least as powerful as he was. It crashed through his beam, opposing his will with its own. He had to let the dragon's breath drop and try something else. Without Dross's active attention, it was harder, but he wove threads of pure Madra and Black Flame Madra together. Then he reached into the lion, sensed its structure, and dismantled it from the inside. His spirit burned as he tried it, and it took a little too long, but it worked. The forger technique fell to chunks of quickly dissolving Madra. Lyndon switched back to his pure core and released the hollow domain as chains of life Madra shot out from the third portal. They looked like shining lime-green roots, but they were unable to break through the domain. Regan Shen was pacing around the fight and back to his chair.
"That is how Osmanthus Aurelius dismantled techniques. Not bad. He elaborated on that in his inheritance."
The monarch reached out, and though his Madra had no aspects of destruction or cleansing, his technique was swifter and more practiced than Lyndon's. The hollow domain fell apart. Tendrils of life Madra crashed down on Lyndon, writhing around him, and he screamed in blinding pain as they tore at his lifeline. The empty palm burst one in half, then he switched to Black Flame to tear the others apart with Dragon's Breath. As soon as Lyndon could breathe again, he tore his void key open. The key snapped. The void space still opened, but it would remain hanging there in midair until it eventually faded closed. But Lyndon couldn't worry about closing it. He reached inside, now that there was actual aura to work with, and summoned Wave Dancer. It shot out on flows of aura, and Reigan Shen watched it with amusement over the rim of a goblet he'd refilled.
"What a coincidence," he said.
A flying sword of his own emerged from nowhere. Lyndon didn't see the portal it had come from, or had the monarch kept it in his soul space. This one was carved like a dancing flame, and it carried a sense of power and presence no less than Midnight's. Wave Dancer clashed against it and was struck down, but Lyndon called Midnight with Wind Aura. The trident flew into his hand, and he hurled it at Reigan Shen. A portal opened and swallowed the weapon.
"It is only right to return stolen belongings," Shen said. "I appreciate that you've taken good care of it."
At the far end of the chamber, one of the already existing golden portals had expanded into a larger form. Lyndon was terrified that Tiberian Aurelius's remnant would emerge, but his earlier theory must have been right. Reigan Shen couldn't summon it since Lyndon had broken the portal. That, or he didn't want to waste energy from a monarch's remnant on one overlord. A black armored leg thicker than Lyndon's body emerged from the giant portal, and the aura in the room trembled. Lyndon realized that he was about to meet the reason why Reigan Shen had scattered natural treasures everywhere. Shen pointed to it.
"This construct does carry a suite of powerful ruler techniques, but that's not the only reason I brought out the natural treasures. No, I simply prefer the light."
Lyndon began drawing in aura of fire and destruction while he forged Black Flame Madra around his left hand.
"You know, this labyrinth should be the perfect environment for you," Weigan Shen called. "I have a bit of a connection to the Void Icon myself. Not enough to call myself a Void Sage, you understand, and I was a herald first anyway."
The armored figure emerged from the giant portal, and Lyndon had finally condensed the dragon descends around his hand. Claws of red and black Madra swirled with aura, a miniature version of the Void Dragon's dance, and it resonated with Lyndon's authority. Even in his senses as a sage, this attack was powerful. He dashed forward with the burning cloak, clashing against the armored construct's fist as it emerged. Madra detonated, flames sweeping away warped white flesh. The construct stumbled back, missing a hand, but it hadn't been defeated. Chains of wind aura grabbed at him, and light aura blinded his eyes. But the last he saw, it was halfway inside the portal.
"Close!" Lyndon shouted, and he felt the surrounding aura release.
He fell to the ground and had to roll out of the way before the smoking front half of the construct landed on him. It had been sliced in half.
"That's exactly why you shouldn't use expensive weapons in battle unless absolutely necessary," Reigan Shen noted. "I have a dozen of those."
Two more portals bloomed to either side of Lyndon. These weren't monarch attacks, like Lyndon had experienced before, but they were roughly Archlord level. Lightning blasted at Lyndon from one portal as fingers of acidic liquid reached for him from the other. From the space of his void key, Lyndon summoned a shield to block the lightning. For the liquid, he met it with an empty palm.
"As I said, this should be the perfect place for you," the monarch went on. "Your home turf, as they say. Your den. It's full of hunger, and you're not hungry enough."
Lyndon called bombs, explosive single-use constructs he'd created months before. Shining orange and red orbs flew at Reigan Shen. He lifted his chin, and a bright golden marble flew from a pouch at his side. It detonated when it hit Lyndon's bombs, wiping all of Lyndon's constructs away in an instant. Lyndon held nothing back. Launcher constructs fired from his void space, and they landed on a forged silver shield that materialized in front of the monarch. A cannon drifted into Lyndon's hands, and he fired. With his black flame Madra and his will joining it, the shot cracked the silver shield in two. Through that crack, a line of dense white gold Madra shot out and speared through Lyndon's arm. He gritted his teeth to keep from screaming and tried to move his arm, but not only was the arm burned clean through, but even his Madra channels were sealed shut. Reigan Shen wasn't even watching the battle.
I, on the other hand, I want it all. I want the Dread Gods, and I want the Monarchs. I want their people, and I want their remnants. I want this world. And I want you, Lyndon.
More portals appeared around Lyndon, but Rhaegon Shen stood up again. He walked up to examine Lyndon.
You could consider all this a test, if you like. I'm impressed. You almost fight like a real sage.
Gratitude,
Lyndon said, through teeth clenched tight against the pain. He was reaching out to the aura around him, following them back to the natural treasures. He wanted more soul fire.
Swear to serve and follow me in all things, and I will take you out of here.
His lips quirked up in a smile.
I will begin the oath this time, if you like. I, Rhaegon Shen, sole monarch of the Rosegold Continent, swear on my soul and my power to take Weishi Lyndon safely away from this place in my service and protect him as long as he remains loyal, in exchange for his promise of fealty.
Lyndon felt the promise settle on the monarch, and it trembled in the air between them, unfulfilled. Time seemed to slow, and not because of Dross. Lyndon's mind was working overtime. He had played every one of his pieces against Rhaegon Shen, and they had all been dealt with. The monarch had clearly never seen him as a real opponent. He hadn't used a single monarch-level weapon, nor most of his path's techniques. He had to have more than just portals into his void spaces. Lyndon suspected Rhaegon Shen could defeat him physically, even without using his path. Therefore, there was only one option. He had to swear. Lyndon had gotten this far by doing whatever he had to in order to accomplish his goals. What was one oath? It would naturally end when Lyndon ascended, and it still didn't bind Dross. That was an oversight that would one day stab Rhaegon Shen in the back. Then again, Rhaegon Shen had his own way out. He could break the oath whenever he wanted, as far as Lyndon knew. It was all about who would betray who first. But as long as Lyndon could make it out of the labyrinth, he'd have a chance. So, for lack of a better option, Lyndon was prepared to make the promise. He didn't really have a choice. The hunger all around him seethed. His arm twitched. It was the same reason why he had been forced to leave Orthos behind. The same reason why Zeal and Mercy had escaped. They had no choice. Reality didn't change just because you wanted it to. Unless you were a sage. Lyndon felt the hunger all around him, and it resonated with the Void Icon. It shook his spirit, and it awakened something in him.
I don't think I agree with you, Lyndon said politely.
Oh?
Rhaegon Shen didn't seem upset. He swirled his goblet.
How so?
You're not hungry enough.
Lyndon forced his way to his feet, and though both of his arms were now crippled, he stared into the monarch's eyes.
You want the Dread Gods? You want to be the only monarch? You're satisfied with ruling this world?
Well, I'm not.
Rhaegon Shen took another sip and then backhanded Lyndon's jaw. His hand stopped an inch from Lyndon's skin, locked by pure will. Lyndon trembled to maintain it, but it had worked. The Void Icon was close, and Lyndon could feel its yawning hunger.
This world doesn't have enough for me. I'm going beyond it.
He reached through the aura for the natural treasures that the monarch had so generously scattered all over the room. Rhaegon Shen's will clashed against his.
These are mine, Shen said. No.
Lyndon reached out, and all over the room, natural treasures burned for soul fire that rushed into his spirit. He could feel the aura trembling, especially the hunger aura. He could see his entire journey like a line that pushed forward in the future.
I practice the sacred arts so that I won't be worthless anymore.
I am not content with this world, Lyndon said.
I advance.
I want more. I want everything.
And now he felt the third advancement in him. He almost said the words, I will never stop. But the Archlord revelation was all about his future, and this one wasn't to his liking. So he changed it.
We, Lyndon said, will never stop.
Soulfire passed through him like a warm breeze. His fading lifeline was restored to a roaring river, and his blood-forged iron body reached another level. His flesh knitted together, though his hunger arm crumbled completely, unable to handle the new level of energy. That was all right. He intended to replace it anyway. His mind was clearer, his body stronger. Even the void icon felt closer than ever, and he stared down the monarch from inches away.
Adorable, Raygun Shen said.
His hand flashed out again, and Linden pitted his will against it. Linden's willpower was much stronger now, and the world warped all around them as they struggled against one another. But this time, Shen broke through and his attack landed. His knuckles cracked against Linden's jaw, sending him flying. Linden called the soul cloak as he flew, twisting to land on his feet. He passed Archlord Soulfire through the hollow domain, which spread out denser than ever.
Then I'll just kill you, Raygun Shen said.
A monarch technique thundered through a portal, the water madra filled with shining malicious spirits. It was weakened by the hollow domain, but its tide still smashed into Linden and carried him away. But Raygun Shen had finished holding back. Striker techniques flew out like a volley of arrows from every direction except one. Raygun Shen ran up behind Linden, the water splitting willingly around him, and he held his axe in both hands. This time, the axe shone with an enforcer technique. Linden struck against it with an empty palm, dispersing the madra and borrowing the force from the attack to fly away, but his hand was almost split in half. Even supported by Archlord Soulfire, he couldn't face a monarch's attack.
Dross, I hope you're ready, Linden thought.
A head-sized ball of purple madra manifested behind Raygun Shen. He was darker than usual this time, almost black, and his crescent grin reminded Linden of Aethon.
Information requested, Dross whispered into Linden's mind. Combat solution against Raygun Shen. Beginning report.
Information flooded Linden's brain, and time froze. This time, Dross's voice was soft and papery, almost frightening.
We cannot defeat him, so we fight to flee. Mice before the cat.
Linden saw the burning cloak spring up around himself. He dashed into the axe, narrowly avoiding the monarch's blow. Some striker techniques hunted him, like sharks in the water, but he could see their trajectory. He had to strike some down with pure madra and dodge others, but he made it over to the wall.
He will unleash his prized possessions as he sees you slither away, Dross whispered. We dance on the razor's edge.
Linden saw the things that would emerge from Dross's portal. Spears of blood and storms of blades. Monarch-level techniques that had not yet been eroded by the labyrinth. The timing would be thin as a fallen leaf, but he saw himself slapping his hand on the wall and exerting his will. The stone blurred, and he ran, just in time. Linden took in all the possibilities, and he made his decision.
I have a better idea, he thought.
Dross laughed madly, and time resumed. Linden followed the path Dross had laid out. He dodged the lion's axe with the speed of the burning cloak, dashing through a net of striker techniques. Gold portals yawned wider as he leaped through the air. He landed in a crouch on the back of Subject One's throne. What was left of Linden's broken hunger arm rested on its stone.
Be gone, Linden commanded.
His authority ran through the labyrinth, but Raygun Shen laughed. His golden portals paused, and he waved a hand casually.
Why don't you be gone?
In the labyrinth, their wills clashed. Raygun Shen had spent almost a year living here. He had absorbed the soulsmith inheritance of Osmanthus Aurelius. He was a monarch in his own right, and he held the core binding of Subject One. His authority over the labyrinth was strong. Linden had grown up here. His void icon resonated strongly with the power of hunger in the labyrinth. He was the apprentice of one of Osmanthus's last descendants. He was only a sage, but he had the blessing of the slumbering wraith, at least his echo. He couldn't tell who had the greater claim over the labyrinth, but he could feel the balance tipping. Linden, after all, had given his word to Subject One, and Raygun Shen had broken his. All at once, space shifted all around the labyrinth. pressure pushed down, and the monarch vanished.
How long will that keep him? Lyndon asked Dross.
Will he batter down our defenses, or will he slip away in shame?
Dross giggled in a way that sent shivers down Lyndon's spine.
I can't wait to see. If he does break down our seals, it will not be soon. He will be locked outside in the cold and hostile world for at least a few hours.
Plenty of time, Lyndon said. Then he tore off Subject One's arm. Chapter 23 Yeren walked up to the slowly opening nether gate with Aethan at her side. She couldn't sense anything outside, but she'd left a little Madra in reserve just in case she had to fight.
You left Lyndon on his own? She asked Aethan.
He had caught up suspiciously quickly.
We became separated, but he has the key. I have every confidence in him.
Yeren chewed on her lip.
Can we get back down there? I suspect not, Aethan said. I only escaped because my opponent was a very reasonable man.
Only left because I thought you'd be with him,
Yeren muttered.
Shame we don't have a key. Maybe we can...
She was cut off when the nether gate swung open enough to reveal a man in black and red robes carrying a sword covered by a blood shadow. She almost attacked instantly. A moment later, she saw a second man carrying a shadow-wrapped chain, and the third, a woman, stood over a trio of captives, Mercy, Orthos, and Little Blue.
Not a scratch on them,
Yeren thought.
That's a bright spot.
Of course, the thought only occurred to her after she had leaped out of the nether gate with her blade raised. Her Madra was already forming the flowing sword around her weapon, and just because she now sensed that the enemy was an archlady didn't mean she was about to stop. The archlady's blood shadow, in the form of a cobra, let out a hiss like a tunnel full of snakes all hissing at once. But it was the Red Moon emissary herself who raised a weapon to stop Yeren. A crystal hand axe flashed out of her soul space and into her hand as Yeren's attack landed. The small weapon stopped Yeren's blow, but it had her full strength behind it. The archlady's knees half buckled and the ground beneath her cracked before she managed to turn the sword aside. Yeren allowed it and let herself fall to the ground, since neither of the overlords had attacked or even threatened the captives.
You've got about a breath and a half before I stop being friendly.
She's not lying, Aethan observed. That was friendly.
Mercy affected a shocked look.
Oh, look, it's Yeren and Aethan. What are the odds?
The archlady straightened herself up.
I am Emissary Kanmala of Red Moon Hall. I come on behalf of the Sage of Red Faith and the Red Moon Herald to protect you.
Yeren had eyes, and her perception wasn't restricted anymore. She could feel the powers clashing all around Sacred Valley, and could see the four Dread God cults positioned over the four peaks. There was a massive battle here, and it looked like the enemy controlled this territory. Yeren tapped her gold signs together, striking up sparks of Madra.
Just wants to protect me, does he? That's more kindness than I'd have bet could fit into his dried-up heart.
Kanmala flinched, and her eyes flicked up, so Yeren immediately assumed they were being watched.
The sage told us that you would attack when you saw us, so he sent enough people to stop you from killing us, but not so many as to threaten you. He asked me to tell you that he knows exactly what you saw in the labyrinth, and to remind you that he was a researcher there himself. He requests an audience with you, and said that you have a chance to affect this entire battlefield. Even withdrawing Red Moon Hall is not off the table.
Yeren considered it a triumph of great personal patience that she let a Red Moon emissary finish that entire speech, and an even greater victory that she considered the message instead of dismissing it out of hand.
I'll match that bet, and raise it a step,
Yeren said at last.
I'll meet him in whatever hole he crawls back into at night, but only after you take us back to our people. Can't relax until I make sure nobody's missing.
Kanmala looked hesitantly over her shoulder, and then the air buzzed as the Blood Sage's voice was transmitted through aura.
We need an assurance of your sincerity, Red Faith said.
Swear on my soul,
Yeren responded casually. The oath tightened and then snapped into place as the Sage of Red Faith agreed, wherever he was. His voice crawled through the air to them again.
Escort her wherever she wishes to go, as long as you do not put her in further danger.
Kanmala bowed to a distant point, and then looked back to Yeren.
Where would you like to go?
Can we get back down to Linden?
Yeren asked Aethon. He shook his head.
Then let's walk the road we've got. Where's the Twin Star sect?
I'll find out,
the Archlady responded. Aethon pointed. Not all squads returned from the battlefield after dark, but theirs was scheduled to. Jailong began to worry as the sun set, and that worry grew with every passing minute. Finally, he went to find the True Gold Skysworn coordinating the Black Flame Empire's forces. The woman was respectful to him, as he was about to advance past her, but she still couldn't help.
They haven't checked in yet, and a number of squads were pinned down on the eastern slope.
There. She pointed, and it was easy to see what she meant. An overlord-level battle had erupted involving Emperor Naruhuan himself. He swept great swathes of destructive green wind madra at his enemy, swinging his black flame greatsword in both hands, while his opponent controlled a pair of gold and blue serpentine dragons made of madra, a stormcaller. Jailong had seen them in battle many times already, though he hadn't crossed spears with them. It usually disturbed him that his sacred arts were so similar to a dread god cult's, but this time his throat was tight.
Kelsa and his sister were trapped behind that.
Every striker technique tore a new path through a forest and broke the clouds apart. But the soulfire was still crawling through his veins, slower, it seemed, every hour. There was nothing he could do. He pressed his fists together and bowed to the Skysworn woman.
Please send someone to inform me when they check in, he said.
She gave him a sympathetic look and a pat on the shoulder.
By this time tomorrow, you'll be an underlord. You'll be able to take revenge yourself.
Jailong didn't care what was going to happen tomorrow. He needed results today, and he was still more capable than any low gold, even mid-advancement as he was. So he walked back to his tent, grabbed his spear, and changed into a nondescript outer robe that he stole from an unattended trunk. He veiled his spirit as best he could, though the soul fire running through his channels meant that he wouldn't stand up to a direct scan, and unwrapped his face. Jailong's advancement to gold had left him with an unfortunate gold sign. Sharp fangs of blue light and cheeks split deeply down his jaw to show them off. Usually he kept his face covered to both protect his reputation and to spare others the sight. Usually. He hoped the advancement to Underlord would fix him, but thus far he'd kept the soulfire refining his spirit, not his body, in order to get him into fighting shape faster. It had slipped into his bones and organs anyway, even some of his limbs, but he'd managed to keep the soulfire away from his face. While it might fix him, it might instead make things worse, and he didn't want to find out until the last possible second. And, more relevant to his current predicament, no one knew what he looked like. He strode out of the Black Flame Empire's camp without anyone stopping him. He had to show his rank chip 3 times to be allowed to leave, but no one questioned a peak True Gold going out to fight. It was perfect timing, in a sense. An Underlord would be too advanced to leave unquestioned, and a High Gold too weak. He wouldn't be able to re-enter the camp without a direct scan of his spirit, which would reveal him, but he shouldn't need to hide then. He wouldn't be alone, or he wouldn't be returning. He filled the body with his Enforcer technique. His inconsistently baptized channels meant that the technique was imbalanced, half powerful and half weak, so the snaking white lines of madra that covered his skin flickered between the verge of vanishing and shining brighter than ever. His stride was just as uneven as the technique. He would dash forward, then stumble as strength left him, then shoot off far faster than he intended as his Enforcer technique gave him more of a boost. He kept his perception extended in case his team was on their way back, which had similar drawbacks. The distance and clarity of his spiritual sense varied by the second, but he made progress quickly, and soon he passed beneath the Overlord battle, which immediately proved to be a mistake. The battle was hardly stationary. The two sacred artists were zipping across the sky. Jailong had balanced slipping past them with staying out of the way, but there was only so much he could do. A blast of wind from the Emperor tore apart a tree to his right, and he was caught with an enhanced gust of wind that tossed him 30 feet back and peppered him with sharp splinters. He managed to land on his feet and block his eyes with an arm, but his body was covered with tiny cuts and scratches. If the attack had been a few yards closer, it would have shattered every bone in his body, at best. Jai Long plunged forward. Lightning dragons screamed through the sky, and hands of wind hurled trees, but he kept his eyes and perception ahead. So he saw immediately when a beam of pink light streamed into the sky at an angle. Jai Long brightened and kicked off again as soon as he could. That was Fingerling's fire breath. He would know it anywhere. Then the light flashed red, and he felt a sudden surge of overwhelming power. It was Red Moon Hall, he was certain. Through sheer will, he squeezed every ounce of speed out of his enforcer technique. There were no more signs of battle coming from that direction, and he tried not to think about what that would mean. His heart pounded in his throat, and his breath was harsh. He gripped the spear so tight he thought he might snap it. He crested a hill and thus saw the source of the blood madra at the same time as he sensed it. Yeren sat with her arms crossed in the center of a circle of blasted trees, looking sullen, as Aethon danced from one side of a narrow pass to the other at Archlord's speed to cut off the retreat of a bunch of stormcallers, who looked very frightened. Jai Long's squad was battered and burned, but they were alive. Mercy was there, holding Orthos and Little Blue, and it seemed like she was lecturing Yeren about something. Jai Chen was on her knees, catching her breath, while an agitated fingerling swirled in the air over her head. Kelsa was nearby, her foxfire tail lashing. She faced a low-gold stormcaller who shuffled from foot to foot nervously and kept glancing behind him. Jai Long's relief almost disrupted his breathing and cut off his enforcer technique, but he seized the cycling pattern at the last second and dashed down. It only took him a moment to arrive. He awkwardly tucked away his spear and wrapped his face as he ran. He wouldn't want to disgust anyone.
"Least he was an underlord," Yeren muttered. "Not like I threw a copper into the sun."
Mercy shook her head.
"No, I'm not saying your heart wasn't in the right place, but he was as helpless against you as our team was against him. They can keep his remnant, supposing they still want it."
A miniature remnant version of the Weeping Dragon slunk along the ground, shooting fearful glances at Yeren. Nearby, an unidentifiable pile told Jai Long what had happened to the spirit's body.
"It's very important that we adhere to the rules of fair play," Aethon called, blocking another escape attempt by the handful of golds. "Speaking of which, how's the duel going?"
Kelsa gestured to her opponent, who was on his knees.
"He surrendered."
"That makes one victory for us. Or, Yeren, do you think your sudden ambush of an underlord should count as a victory?"
The dragon remnant whimpered.
"I don't feel good about this," Kelsa muttered.
Aethon nodded in understanding.
"Ah, yes. By all means, let us return to murdering each other honorably."
Mercy slammed her staff into the ground, and shadow pulsed out from the base. The stormcallers flinched back.
"There are reasons for this, and you know it. No one wants a slaughter where only the most advanced sacred artists survive."
"I wish that were true," Aethon said wistfully.
But he did stand aside and let the gold rush off. Kelsa's opponent bowed to her one more time before retreating, and the remnant slithered after him.
"Not lining up to cut jades into pieces, am I?"
Yeren complained.
"We'll take your path, then. Who's a match for me?"
Mercy hesitated. Aethon shaded his eyes and made a show of peering around.
"You're a bit of an exception, but by common understanding, him."
He pointed to the battle between overlords through which Jai Long had just crossed. The fight was winding down as the overlords ran out of madra, so larger techniques weren't as common as they had been minutes before. Yeren took a moment to take aim.
"Neat and tidy," she said.
Then she unleashed a line of bright silver-red madra. The Stormcaller Overlord had a moment to turn and put up a block before he was obliterated. Yeren glared at Mercy.
"You want me to go fight his remnant with one hand behind my back?" "Maybe we should find a new opponent for you,"
Mercy allowed.
"Are there any Archlords out here?"
As though summoned by her words, Zeal flew through the air, his gray cloak fluttering with the wake of his speed. A ring of green runes flashed in the air, stopping him, and he dropped in front of Yeren.
"I felt storm collars," he said,
and his eyes were unusually bright. Yeren jerked a thumb in their direction.
"Just missed them. You can catch up." "They're just golds,"
Mercy protested. Zeal's shoulders slumped.
"Ow."
Black Flame Emperor Naru Huan raised a hand in Yeren's direction, and she returned it lazily. Then he flew off on wide emerald wings. Jai Long had walked up to join Kelsa and his sister, and they watched the exchange together. For such a frightening display, it had been disturbingly casual. He looked to his squad.
"I came to save you," he said.
Kelsa nodded seriously.
"Gratitude."
Rigun Shen stalked out of the Nethergate, but not with as much triumph in his heart as he had imagined. If he were in his lion form, his tail would be lashing. He had the slumbering wraith's core binding tucked away in a sealed case. He'd come out with the unexpected bounty of Osmanthus Aurelius's soulsmith inheritance, and he was about to see the sunlight he had dreamed of for months. But he had been driven out of his own den. He would challenge it again soon, but all the time inside the labyrinth had weakened him greatly. Time was on his side, even if the Void Sage ended up taking over the labyrinth. Rhaegon would gather his strength, and then see how Lyndon Aurelius could stand up to a true monarch. The stone door hadn't even closed behind him before the leaders of the cults appeared before him. The emissaries of Red Moon Hall, who had been guarding the door, had fallen to their knees as he appeared, but he didn't glance at them, only looking to the herald and sages who appeared behind them. The Blood Sage, Silent Sage, and Storm Sage arrived first, followed soon after by the herald of Abyssal Palace. To them, he presented a sealed silver box.
"I have succeeded," he said gravely.
All their eyes lit up at once, as well they should. This binding was the mythical item that their idols had sought since time immemorial.
"The enhancement field is functioning at full capacity," Red Faith reported. "However, with Subject One removed, the hunger aura will exceed our containment at any time. I recommend we hurry."
"We should," Rhaegon agreed. "I will begin the process. One of you stand guard here."
All four cult leaders gave him a blank look.
"Why?"
the Storm Sage asked. He wore his confusion so openly that Rhaegon wanted to claw his face off. The masked herald of Abyssal Palace placated him.
"We will place our best sacred artists here."
"No, yourselves. Do it."
He caught himself, took a deep breath, and moderated his tone before these allies.
"Because I have requested it of you."
The Storm Sage shrugged both shoulders and sank to the ground, leaning his back against the door, and whistled idly. He snatched up a flower and started pulling its petals off one by one. Red Faith gnawed on one finger as he gazed on Rhaegon Shen, and as usual, Rhaegon couldn't tell if the sage was sizing him up for a betrayal or lapsing into drooling lunacy.
"Do you have a question, Red Faith?"
Rhaegon Shen asked. He was weakened badly after such a long stay in the labyrinth, and the sage knew it better than anyone. But one advantage of being Rhaegon Shen is that no one else knew what cards you had to play, even when your hand was empty. Rhaegon met the sage's eyes with complete calm, and eventually Red Faith pointed to the sky with a bleeding finger.
"As I said, it will be for the best if we hurry."
Without waiting any further, Rhaegon Shen seized the wind aura, it was all but the last of his soul fire, and drifted into the air. He held the silver box aloft, and he projected his voice with herald lungs. He didn't trust the rest of his soul fire to carry his voice.
"I am the Emperor of the Rose Gold Continent, and I have returned in glory. I invite my peers to witness my triumph."
The Eight-Man Empire appeared first, of course. Rhaegon wouldn't be making a speech if his allies weren't closer than his enemies. Some hovered in the air near him, some lounged on clouds, and some stayed on the ground. But their presence made it clear that they would defend him when Malice and Northstrider drifted closer. The two human monarchs were side by side, Northstrider muscled but covered in rags, and Malice finely dressed but soft. Neither of their appearances did them justice, in Rhaegon Shen's opinion. Malice's voice was carried to him on the wind.
You come to us so boldly, weakened as you are. Tell me, now that you have your prize, how do you plan to leave with it?
Northstrider simply glared.
Why do I feel like I have been severely underestimated? Rhaegon asked.
Now that he was back in his element, with aura nourishing him more at every second, and his own spirit restoring his body, he was starting to enjoy himself.
As I said all along, we could have shared this bounty together. I would have relished your wealth of experience, both of you, and would have been willing to set aside our years of rivalry for mutual benefit.
Is that what you told Tiberian? Malice asked.
Rhaegon raised his eyebrows and looked from one of his peers to the other.
Tiberian wanted us to kill the Dread Gods and ascend. Would you have allowed that?
Now that he'd recovered some of his power, he could spend a fraction on theatrics. He summoned a goblet and a jar of wine. A construct poured for him.
I interrupted my work for this, Northstrider said. I will not come all this way and then allow you to escape.
Ah, but you see, I don't need to escape.
With one hand, Rhaegon Shen lifted the goblet to his lips. With the other, he tapped the silver cube in a throwaway gesture. It unfolded, unveiling the core binding of the slumbering wraith. Its authority screamed through reality, warping the world in an invisible vortex. Colors seemed to leach from everything, and immediately an image formed in the sky overhead. A widened mouth full of sharpened fangs. The hunger icon. The sages braced themselves against the exposed power of Subject One, but none of the monarchs batted an eye. The eight-man empire, protected as they were by their armor, looked on only with interest. Malice's eyes shone purple and she radiated fury, ready to summon her armor at any second.
If you call the Dread Gods here, you will all perish with us. I promise you that.
Rhaegon feigned surprise.
Here? I don't need them here. Not yet.
Then he activated the binding in his palm. Invisible power and white aura thundered out from him, traveling along invisible metaphysical paths. He had never known this was possible, never gained the insight necessary into the mechanics of reality until Tiberian gave him the hint. Then he'd researched on his own. He'd consulted with the Sage of Red Faith, even gathering the Dread God cults to gain their knowledge on the invincibility of the Dread Gods. Ultimately, he'd realized what he needed to do. He would fuse with this binding and become the new slumbering wraith, attaining immortality and power beyond the dreams of monarchs. He had intended to take over the labyrinth first, then recover his power, then become the new Dread God. He was doing things a little out of order. But it would all be worth it. All of it. Once the Dread Gods were awakened. At the heart of a mountain range far to the north of Sacred Valley, the Wandering Titan dug deeper into a chasm of its own construction. It could have controlled the surrounding aura to make a tunnel, but it didn't bother. Why expend energy it didn't have to? So with every movement, it burrowed deeper into the earth, and the nation above it split further. A city collapsed over its head, buildings crashing on its shell, and it didn't even feel them. It was digging for something that smelled delicious. The Titan finally burst through a metal container almost as big as its own ribcage. Inside, there was a structure of interlocking metal swirling with sand that glowed gold. A relic of ancient times. The Titan could smell the ancient aura in every grain of sand. The device gave off the impression of distant lands, and the will of its creators was ingrained deep. It was meant to birth a city, or maybe revive one, and then carry it to distant worlds through the void. Not that any of that mattered to the Titan. It took in the details without consideration, tore off a chunk of the ancient metal frame, and shoved the piece into its mouth. Over its head, sacred artists fled in every direction, but the Titan had already begun feeding. Earth aura flowed into it from miles around, and power of all sorts flooded from the ancient device. The Titan continued to crunch down on the vessel, but it fed on more than just what entered its mouth. The entire device grew weaker and weaker as it fed, power of all kinds flowing into the Titan. Soul fire, willpower, authority, madra, aura, it all went to fill the empty space inside the Titan. For now. It knew that the hunger would return. It always did. But in the moments when it fed, it was content to do nothing else. It hadn't been truly satisfied since its birth. Then it caught the scent of something irresistible. Its stone head snapped up, and one of the cliffs around it snapped off and shattered to dust on its shoulder. This was the smell of the original. The Titan reached up to the surface and began to haul itself up. It was going to return to the origin of this scent, and maybe it would finally be satisfied. Or so it thought, until the golden aura on which it had fed flashed white. Then, at last, it got a taste of what it meant to feel content. Everything else it had ever eaten was nothing. It was just a lick, while this was a full meal. The aura streamed into it, accompanied by a nourishing will. Its soul swelled, pushing deeper into its body. Its muscles bulged, and its skin hardened. Its eyes glowed brighter. The Titan felt like it did when it awakened from the long sleep, but now it was awakening even further. Now, it was more awake than it had ever been. With more agility than it had been capable of a moment before, the wandering Titan slid out of its chasm. This time, it was conscious of all the lives that were lost as the ground cracked and crumbled for miles around. Marvelous! It was as though it could see everything. For the first time, the wandering Titan considered what it wanted beyond its next meal. And as it thought, it wandered. The bleeding phoenix called a rain of red lightning that blotted out the sky, but its fury accomplished nothing. It was only expressing its rage. It remembered a human, a tiny man with punches that summoned blood dragons miles long. It remembered another, a titan in purple armor. Those two were prey, but they had dared to harm it. It wanted revenge. It wanted to devour them. Its awareness was scattered, so that at times it felt more like a council in its own head, but it vaguely remembered a time when it could have found these humans in a moment and annihilated them. Now, it couldn't even come to a decision. Should it split and gather power? Should it find the humans and head straight for them, no matter the cost? Should it sleep? Thinking was hard. It hadn't always been this hard. After a good sleep and a long session of feeding, then it would know the right thing to do. The many minds and spirits inside of it would be more unified then. But it couldn't spare the time for that. It needed a decision now. It continued unleashing power on nothing, its attacks powerful enough to warp reality, but each blow consumed power it would need to restore. It hated those humans, all humans. At the same time, it had memories from millions of humans. The phoenix grew very confused. A moment later, a surge of white power swept through the sky. The dread god's techniques froze, and it fell into a daze. This was the presence of the original, the final will of its father, its oldest brother, its original template. This was a gift. The phoenix absorbed the power as easily as thirsty soil absorbed rain. The minds of the many spirits within it merged, fusing into one another, and the phoenix grew larger. Its will grew stronger, and its consciousness was finally, blessedly clear. It remembered. The male human was Northstrider, a monarch who had stolen power, some of the phoenix's power in particular. The dread god was irritated at its past self for allowing Northstrider to touch it. The female human was Malice, queen of the Akura clan. Her lands were not far. A moment ago, the phoenix had plenty of strength, but only instinct controlling it. Now its increase in power was negligible compared to its clarity. It knew what to do. Carefully, the bleeding phoenix began to dissolve its body. It melted into droplets that fell like rain, each drop an egg that slipped through a subtle spatial distortion. It spread itself widely and quietly. The human would not pierce its veil before it was too late. By then, the phoenix would have devoured its lands. Beaks couldn't usually smile, but the bleeding phoenix was made of blood and mudra. It twisted its face into a parody of a human grin. Then even that liquefied, and the droplets teleported away. On another continent, the weeping dragon tossed in its dreams. It floated on a bed of clouds, and it dreamed of what it always did. The past, when it had wandered freely, when it had done battle, even longer ago than that, when it had been confined. Once it had been less than what it was, but the process of growing, of becoming, had taken something away as well. The weeping dragon was technically capable of thinking at a level far beyond the ordinary human, but it had been centuries since it was more than a beast. Once the dragon had thoughts, plans, ambitions. Once the dragon had a name. The dragon dreamed of these times, and in its sleep it wept for what was lost. Rain fell from its bed of clouds, watering the land. Then its dreams changed. More memories came of its predecessor, its form beautiful and white and hungry, the one who had infected it with the hunger that could never be satisfied. In its dreams, the dragon was furious at its ancestor for passing on this curse. Though it knew that the original's fate was far worse than its own, the weeping dragon couldn't resist its own anger. Until it woke, and then its thoughts would retreat back into haze, and it would revert to a predator prowling on instinct, just food and sleep. While it dreamed, the weeping dragon feared waking. But not this time. It found that its dreams grew clearer and clearer. First, they were dreams of the past, and then they were memories, and then they were thoughts, realizations, knowledge, plans. What it had lost was coming back, and the weeping dragon realized that it was becoming whole. It woke, and this time it really woke. The dragon's cry of joy alone killed thousands of people. It was aware of this, though it didn't care. Distantly, it knew that something must have happened to its predecessor. The slumbering wraith had died, or at least released what it had been holding. The dragon would check on that later. There might be something to learn. But for now, it would relish being in control of its own body. It wanted more than just food. It wanted shelter, a domain, children, servants, treasures. Countless serpents of Madra rained from its cloud, crackling with its lightning and carrying its will. It wanted everything. Deep in the jungles of the Everwood continent, the Silent King crouched in its den. Unlike its siblings, the king had never lost use of its mental faculties. It would have been impossible to control Dream Madra otherwise. It was its body that had suffered. It had never carried as much devastating destructive power as the others, and was only as big as one of these human houses, but for the last several centuries it could be overpowered even by the average human herald. While it was almost always better to avoid dangerous combat, the Silent King still considered this unacceptable. It was a dread god. Except by its own siblings, it should be unequaled in all respects. The Silent King's mind was rarely focused on its own body. Even now, it tended to its mental web. Its subjects filled the jungle for hundreds of miles. They lived in cities, talked, joked, created art. Remnants crept by newborn sacred beasts, and both traded respectful nods. Neither should be as intelligent or aware as they were, but thanks to their king, they could live up to their full domain. In these lands, there was true peace. But this was as far as its domain would ever extend. The thought filled it with fury, and back in its den it opened its jaws. A waiting sacred artist plunged willingly into its teeth, and the king chewed. The snack helped a little, though of course no amount of food could ever fulfill the curse of its hunger madra. That was a problem it could solve, though, if only it was allowed to. For the 100,000th time, the Silent King ran its spiritual perception around the boundaries of its kingdom. Roots stretched all around it, roots under her command, its greatest enemy. The Silent King knew that its sibling, the dragon, often lost itself in dreams of the past, but its dreams were crude, simple. It didn't know how to dream. The king knew, and sometimes its dreams were so vivid as to be indistinguishable from waking. Whenever it dreamed, it liked to imagine the elaborate revenge it would take on Emrys Silentborn. It dreamed of revenge even more often than it dreamed of plans to restore its power. The only reason for achieving its full potential was for revenge. That, and to spread its peace over all the world. Satisfying its hunger would be a nice side effect, but it had willpower the likes of which mere humans could not comprehend. It could withstand its own urges forever without losing itself. It wasn't a barbarian like its siblings. It could endure. But when the wave of hunger aura passed over it, the Silent King drank it in with absolute delight. While it luxuriated in the sensation, it never stopped thinking. Who had killed the Wraith? Who could have breached that prison? The Silent King had tried personally, centuries ago, and failed. Whoever it was, the Dread God owed them a debt. One day, if it was so inclined, it would repay that service. Perhaps this mysterious savior would enjoy a continent in thanks. They had granted the Dread God's greatest wish. Its will drew tight, more potent than ever, and the wills of everyone in its kingdom focused as well. Some died of exertion, blood running from their eyes, but most could handle this slight burden of will. All that willpower focused on the tip of the king's claw, and it slashed once through the air. The roots wrapping around the kingdom were neatly sliced. The organic script circle failed, and Emrys Silentborn's Madra drifted away like so much smoke. Finally, the Silent King was free to rule. Chapter 24. Information restricted. Personal record 5716. Authorization required to access. Authorization confirmed. 008. Osriel. Beginning record. Osriel reached out to a shard of his own power, created long ago, a beacon left behind in Cradle. It contained a dare, a challenge, an invitation for anyone talented enough to join him. He changed the message. He shared the situation of the heavens with them and expanded their viewpoint beyond the world. He included his weariness and his vision for the future. No longer did Osriel want descendants who would prove worthy of him. Now he just wanted help, someone who could share his burden. He layered more memories beneath his message, personal records to one day be accessed by his heir. Even so, as the years stretched on, none of his descendants used the black marble. The Court of Seven, again and again, denied his request to recruit. He had started off pleading, then reasoning, and now his meetings with Machiel had become openly hostile. When their conflict destabilized the surrounding iterations, forcing the intervention of Suriel, she had made them swear to stay separated. Osriel felt somewhat guilty for that. The longer the situation went on, the more worlds the Reaper was forced to take, and the greater his burden grew. Even so, he continued doing his duty. Until one day, he realized he couldn't take it anymore. If the court wouldn't act, he would do it himself. They had gotten along without him before, and they could do it again. He looked ahead into fate and prepared. Osriel spread false trails throughout existence so that even the Hound couldn't track him. He even left messages for Suriel, presuming that she would be the one to hunt him. High-ranking Abaddon could see through any disguise, so he would be found eventually, but he needed to make this chance last as long as possible. The corruption of chaos would devour certain worlds while he was gone, so he set up shelters in the most vulnerable to preserve as much as he could. He would leave the Abaddon, temporarily sealing off his powers, and raise up a team of ascendants loyal to him. Then, when he was taken back by the court, his team could save worlds. It was while he was inside Iteration 216, Limit, arranging another of his shelters, that he discovered something odd. A subtle touch of chaos in the future that only he, or Amakiel sitting where he was, could have discovered. His presence dismissed it as a distant echo of the void, but Osriel took greater notice. If Avrosir wanted to sneak into Abaddon territory, Limit would be the perfect first step. So Azrael hid himself in Limit, lying in wait for his prey. As he waited, he considered which world he should eventually hide in. He planned, he thought, he consulted his presence, he ran simulations and predictions. Ultimately, there was only one thing he was certain about. He was never going back to Cradle. Not only would the other judges check Cradle quickly, but there were too many bad memories. While it would always be his homeworld, a not inconsiderable part of him hated Cradle. He hated it for not being better. While he crouched in Limit, calculating his hiding place, his prediction paid off. A being of great power and destruction entered the world, so subtly that they had evaded the web of the spider. An old enemy, well hidden. Synchronization requested. Synchronization set at 73%. Synchronizing. Azrael waited in his shelter beneath the waves of Limit, scythe in hand. He felt the Vroshir arrive and was surprised not to recognize them. Judges recognized people by the origin of their existence, by the very essence that defined them, which was impossible to fake. The world quaked beneath him, so this intruder's power was incredible. How could this person be unknown? How could they have slipped past the Abaddon web of detection? Azrael intended to find out. He felt the moment when the Vroshir intruder detected him, sensing an Abaddon in the world. The intruder instantly sealed off the world and pounced, a cat on a mouse, eager to find prey. Azrael smiled. When the Mad King appeared before him, Azrael splattered Daruman's mortal body all over the opposite wall with one swing of his scythe. That had been nice and therapeutic, and a memory Azrael would treasure, but he was still shocked. He hadn't seen Daruman face to face in centuries, ever since the Mad King had broken out of the depths of Haven. It had to be him. He was wearing one-of-a-kind armor, and he hadn't changed his appearance at all. But Azrael still didn't recognize him. His senses insisted that this couldn't be Daruman. It simply wasn't him. The conclusion was as intriguing to Azrael as it was impossible. He had found a way to disguise his own existence, even from judges. Azrael stepped through space and into the upper atmosphere, where Daruman had created a new body for himself. The judge leaned his scythe against his armored shoulder. "That's a fine mask you have there. Where did you get it?" Ofkimeth, the fiend sealed inside Daruman, snarled defiance. The red suns that were the Mad King's eyes blazed, and he stabbed out with a bone sword. Even as a mortal, Daruman had been powerful enough to challenge world-eaters. A blow from him should have blighted the planet. But he was holding back. When his sword met the scythe, space cracked and reality warped, but it didn't break. The Vroshir didn't want to attract attention, which suited Azrael just fine. He didn't want the attention of the other judges any more than the Mad King did. The quiet battle between the two still obliterated stars and left holes in space. With each exchange, Azrael became more confident. This was certainly the Mad King. There was an extremely short list of individuals who could trade blows with Azrael's scythe. And if this was the Mad King, then he had created something that hid him from the way, a veil on his existence itself. Finally, as they drifted back down to the central planet of Limit, Daruman himself spoke. His voice was hollow, echoing with the emptiness of the void.